and welcome to Comic Talk Today for Sunday, June 3rd, 2018. I got that right this time. Joining me on this special episode is the heir to the Nerd Legion Network throne from Absolute DC, Ultimate Marvel, Timey-Wimey Podcast Hour. Am I missing any?
Nope, that's pretty much it these days.
Ronnie Baron!
What's up?
What's up, dude? Pretty sure I just swallowed a bug. What the hell was that?
Well, that's not. Maybe you get your protein for the night.
Dangerous. I can't eat bugs. It's not in my diet.
Well, it's not meat, really.
Yeah, I guess you're right. We're not here to talk about my dietary supplements. Ronnie and I read the new Comixology original titles, and we're going to talk about them.
Yeah.
So I hadn't had a chance to talk to you about this. How'd you feel about the announcement?
I thought it was pretty awesome, actually, because even like when Comixology first started, really, we had some free books. We had, what was it called? American Army?
The Army book.
Yeah, and then there's a Cyber Force run that was free.
Yep.
Also.
That was the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So I thought it was pretty awesome, and then I'm Comixology Unlimited, so I get more comics for free. I mean, come on. Dude, how can I say no to that?
I saw a couple creators complaining on Twitter. One that we both know. I'm not going to call him out, but he was bitching about it. I'm like, what? Why are you complaining about this?
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. He's local to you.
Oh, well, then I probably know who you're talking about, then.
You do. I'll tell you later.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's freaking awesome. One thing I missed when I was talking about it on Friday's episode was that the print books, they're doing print on demand. And I think that's pretty cool because they don't have to print any comics until somebody orders one.
Yeah, that's pretty damn smart, actually.
It's really freaking smart.
That's like... just leveling up the game.
Mm-hmm. I agree. They are, dude, the overhead on this stuff has to be so low.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So low.
And like you and I have talked about it countless times. I know you and Nick's talked about it countless times, but they already have the PDF or whatever. So why not print them or why not make them digital?
God, that makes me so mad. It makes me so mad. I wanted to bring it up with a creator I just had on. I'm not going to call out who. But yeah, that's one thing that we talked offline about is, you know, if these people have the PDFs to go back and forth between each other, why can you not just put it on Comixology?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about some of these books, Ronnie. I'm going to, since you're my guest on this episode, I'm going to let you pick the first one.
Okay. I'm going to shock you, though, and I'm going to pick Super Freaks, the first one, talk about.
That's not shocking. I was actually hoping you would pick Super Freaks first.
All right.
Because we are on the same page here. So yep. Super Freaks is a 5-issue miniseries written by, I should have you pronounce these names.
No.
Elsa Charretier, Pierrick Collinet, and drawn by Margot Salter. They're French creators, and this is kind of a YA book, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really YA, and it's actually, the art is like animation cells.
Yeah, it is. I don't know if you saw the live stream, but they had her drawing on the live stream, and she draws on an iPad, basically.
Huh. No, I didn't see the live stream, so okay. That would have been awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool to see. I mean, they were only on there for like 10 minutes, so it was kind of a quick sketch, but it was pretty sweet. It was, oh God, what was the girl's name? Savage, I guess?
Yeah.
The one that pops in towards the end of the first issue. Yeah, it was cool. It was cool to see. So yeah, it's almost an animation style. I don't want to say painterly, but it's got like, it almost feels like, I don't know about watercolors. That's not the right thing.
No.
I mean, having seen other guys and gals that do exclusively on like a Wacom tablet, I got the feeling it was the same kind of style. Like when what's the guy's name? Clayton Crane?
Yeah.
On Rye. You can tell that it's not drawn or painted, right? Because he does all his stuff digitally as well.
Right.
So there's like that, I don't want to say weird coloring, because that's bad also. But it almost feels like it's painted, but you can tell it's not actual paint.
Right. It has that distinct real look on it.
Yeah, yeah. So basically the gist of the story, by the way, we should mention, there's the 5-issue mini, but all 5 issues are out now. And
yeah.
I thought that was really interesting also. Because that might be the first comic that I've seen do that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're in the binging era, so that's why not,
true.
Right?
That's true. Yeah, I'm surprised nobody's done that to begin with.
Well, and actually, this is the title to do that with, if we're your target audience that you want.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah. A lot of the young adults are instant gratification type stuff, or the binge watching. I mean, we binge watch too, but but you know, right now it's like, oh, this number one's awesome. I don't want to wait 2 weeks because, you know, we might go on to something else. Yep. So we'll go straight to issue two.
Yep. So even though all 5 issues are out, we decided not to read all 5 issues. We're going to say it's because we're super awesome and wanted to give all the books a fair chance. And since there's the rest of them only have one issue out, then that's what we did. I don't think that's actually the case. I didn't want to read all 5, to be honest. I'm going to read all 5, but I'm going to kind of space it out a little bit.
Okay.
Even though I'm definitely not the audience for this book. And I don't think you are either.
No.
But with that
being said, though,
yeah,
I highly enjoyed it, though.
Yeah, it was pretty enjoyable. There's, the first issue is a lot of setup, and I think the problem I had is the first issue is longer than the rest, because I think all the issues are going to be like 25 pages. The first one's like 40.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's a lot of stuff to cram in there to get it started. Because I thought about that. Like, where would you break it to go to issue two?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So,
because they do introduce all the characters on this new team within that short span. And you get to... You learn what this crisis is.
Yeah.
And it is, I think, very much targeted towards kids. There's a lot of, like, tweets on there. Right. But it also deals with like stuff that kids deal with in school, like body shaming, and things like that. Because one of the main sidekicks in this book, one of the main heroes or heroines, is very tall and very overweight. So what happens is all the actual heroes in this world disappear, like literally vanish. Right. Because her hero guy, her boss. Like, all you see is his cape on his chair.
Mm-hmm.
They literally disappear, and so it's up to them to find out what's going on, except nobody knows who these sidekicks are because they're sidekicks.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of interesting, right?
Yeah. Because they don't want to know who they are because, like, the general public doesn't know the whole story. Like, it normally is in the real world,
sure.
I guess.
Yeah.
But the actual heroes hog the limelight and just force the sidekicks down.
Yeah, and I thought that was interesting, right? Because I don't think that's ever been done in a comic. Like, we've seen, like, good heroes turn bad heroes turn good. Like, sidekicks go from sidekick to being a hero in their own right, like Nightwing, for example.
Right.
But you never... I've never seen a comic where the heroes treat their sidekicks like crap. And these heroes, like, treat all their sidekicks like total garbage.
Yeah.
Like, all they do is, like, hey, go fetch me some coffee. Like, pick up my laundry. And I thought that was pretty interesting. I like that one girl where, like, she keeps getting texts from her boss hero. And he's like, oh, Red's robbing the bank. She's like, yeah, I'll pass. Like, hey, I spilled coffee on my shirt. Like, go to the laundromat and pick, or the dry cleaner and pick me up another one. She's mm-hmm. like, nah, I'm good. Like, I'm just chilling at the house.
Yeah.
But the rest of them don't do that. And I think some of them kind of seem to have accepted the role that they have. Most of these heroes are really young, except the one kind of confused me. The tall, bald guy, I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
Because they mentioned he's been a sidekick for decades.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming he's like in his 40s, at least.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't really, I mean, I read that too, but I kind of glossed over it.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that, well, but the van, the all magical van yeah. gave them all powers at the same time, though.
Yeah, we should talk about the van. Because they even make a joke out of it in the first issue.
Yeah.
You know, every hero has an origin story, and we've seen all kinds of ways that heroes get powers, like they're aliens, or this one reminded me a little bit of the Malibu stuff, right, where they're mm-hmm. on the trolley car,
yeah,
and they get superpowers that way. In this universe, all heroes get their powers from a Volkswagen van, who yep. just drives around and shoots a laser that gives people powers. And I thought the way it was handled was kind of interesting, because it's almost like a god figure in this world.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, well, it's actually like the general public look at the heroes as gods.
Yeah.
Because, like, as soon as they vanish, then the news guy even says, well, what are we supposed to do now? All of our protectors are gone.
Yep.
And then that's when, like, he made that snarky remark about holding a press conference. The sidekicks were holding a press conference instead of actually trying to go find them.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. I enjoyed it, though, even through all that.
No, I really enjoyed it.
I think I got I finished the first one. I started the second issue, but I just kind of dropped off. I was like, I'll just hold off on this one. I kind of want to pass it off to the kids and have them read it and see how they feel about it. Because I think, you know, like, that's definitely the audience. I would say middle school to, like, early high school. And, you know, my oldest is in eighth grade, so this might be, like, totally in her demographic. And the majority of the main sidekicks, the main heroes in this book, I would say are roughly around that age, like 15, 16. So it might fit well for her. We'll see. She just got back from New York, so I don't want to be like, hey, go read this comic.
You got homework to do.
Do some homework. But it was enjoyable. It was enjoyable. The art was good. The writing's good. The dialogue is very much, it's very simple.
Yeah, it's very PG as well.
Extremely PG, yeah. And I wonder if some of that isn't because of the fact that the creators are French, and so English is not their first language. And it makes it easier to write dialogue for a younger audience than it would for old folks like us.
Yeah. Could be.
But I think it worked pretty well, though. You want to rate this one up, or you have any final thoughts?
No, final thoughts. I'm going to be like you, and I don't know if I'll rush out and read number two right away.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely going to read the rest of them. I'm going to actually surprisingly give it pretty high. I'm going to give it a 3.75.
Oh, that's pretty good. That is pretty good. I'm going to go 3.5. I think it's worth reading, especially if you're a parent with kids. And you, that's the thing, too, dude. Like, you know, you've got Austin, and Austin reads comics.
Yeah.
But, like, I've got girls, and I think for girls it's a little harder to get them to read comics.
Yeah.
Or to find something that they will enjoy. And I think this is definitely something that they might enjoy picking up. And it'd be a nice way for us to connect, you know?
Yeah.
Because pretty much all I do is talk about comics all the damn time.
Well, yeah. Welcome to my world. But, like, on the flip side of that, I'm not sure that... Because Austin will be a senior this year, so I'm not sure that he would like it as much as, like, your daughter would.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that.
Because he's at the age of, like, when we were at, like, discovering Vertigo for the first time, or Image, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, he likes his more hard-nosed, edgy-ish type stuff.
Yep. All right. I want to go to one I think will be the most... will have the most wide appeal out of all of these.
Okay.
And that's Elephant Men 2261.
All right.
This is written by Richard Starkins with art by Axel Medellin and Boo Cook. And I think Boo just does the cover, actually, now that I think about it. And this is a continuation of the Elephant Men story that's been going on for like 10, 15, 20 years. Brand new story. There's some new characters introduced. And I really enjoyed this one. I've been a... I don't know if you've read Elephant Men before, but I've been a fan for quite a while. I think it's a little simpler story than what I'm used to out of that book, but I understand why maybe it should be. I don't think Elephant Men has never been like a super popular book. I'm sure most people have never even heard of it. But, you know, with this being a new initiative, obviously they want to have a new number one. And, you know, Comixology's got a good relationship with Richard. So I understand why they would try to keep the story a little bit simpler. But there's a lot going on in the story. And I'm not sure... how familiar are you with Elephant Men?
Not really. I know... I heard about it, like I said, with the Comixology stuff before, but like it always was on my radar, then off my radar.
Yeah.
And then on a previous episode, when you were talking about it, then it like sparked again and I got them again, but I hadn't gone back. I started with this one.
No, that's good though. So with you not having any prior knowledge about this world, how'd you feel about this first issue as an introduction to the world? How confused are you, first of all?
I don't know if confused is the word, but I have lots more questions than about what's going on.
Okay.
I mean, I guess where I'm confused at is like where does the gene splicing or whatever start at, and where does it stop at? Because like we see like horses that are just regular horses, right?
Right.
But then like one of the soldiers that was executed on the whatever that was tortured and executed was a giraffe,
right?
So you know where does it make sense of what animals get whatever.
So if from what I remember, the majority of the elephant men are either elephants, rhinos, or hippos. And there's a few other like big game animals.
Okay.
But I don't remember there ever being like domesticated animals turned into elephant men.
Okay.
The reason for that is these things were created to be soldiers in war. And so it would make sense to have big burly animals with tough hides because they would make better soldiers, right?
Right.
And that comes into play in the story here. You got two different stories going on. One with Shorty, so you're going to learn like the story of how he ended up getting killed. Shorty's the elephant.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other story is kind of like investigating sort of the background of how we got to this place.
Right.
And in the beginning, when we're learning about Shorty, that's one of the things that comes up, right? Because Yvette, is hunting the elephant men because she feels that they're responsible for the death of her family. And the reason she goes through these complicated schemes to trap them is because she can't just go up to them and shoot them, because the bullets will just like bounce off their skin.
Yeah.
Because they have really tough hides. So she has to trap them and like cut them with whatever, her machete or whatever she's got. Yeah. And that's what she leaves her mark on them, so that all the other elephant men understand that like she's coming for them as well. And I thought that was a really interesting story. I actually enjoyed that part of the book a lot more than the present day stuff.
Yeah.
Because it felt very real and visceral. I don't know if you saw the last Planet of the Apes movie with the one with Woody Harrelson.
What was that?
War for the Planet of the Apes, maybe?
Yeah.
In many respects, like the plot of that part of the story is very similar to War for the Planet of the Apes.
Right.
Right? Because that's the reason Woody Harrelson's character is after the apes. They killed his... He feels like they're responsible for killing his family. And he doesn't care, like, what apes he kills. He just knows he wants to kill the apes. Because they ruined his life.
Yeah, she had the quote of the book for me. It's like, I want you guys to feel fear for humans as much as we feel for you.
Yeah.
I thought that was really powerful. Because if you're almost, like, when you're reading it from the elephant men's point of view.
Yep.
But at that point, it kind of changes, and you kind of see why she's doing what she's doing, or why she's... you almost have empathy for her, but not to the point of where you want all the elephant men to die.
Mm-hmm.
So it all comes into, like, the bigger picture of why it's happening.
Yeah, and at the same, I don't blame her for what she did, right? Like, when they first start showing the stuff she's doing to these elephant men, you're like, well, you know, this chick's freaking crazy.
Right, yeah.
Until she actually shows up and starts talking, and then you kind of begin to understand.
Right.
And, you know, I don't want to compare this book to, like, Animosity, but, you know, there is definitely something about bringing in animal characters into a story to play the roles of human characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in many ways it makes it a little more powerful.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Art-wise, how'd you like the art?
Art-wise, I thought it was pretty good. Yeah. I thought it fit the story. I mean, it wasn't rough or scratchy or anything like that. So it was pretty clean and neat.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was pretty good. For a first issue, I think it sets up the world pretty well. I know, and I'm sure you have a million questions, and I'm not sure how much of that will be answered in this particular series.
Right.
Because there's already so much history established with these characters.
Right. Well, this issue, for me coming in fresh, actually makes me want to go back and read the older stuff even more.
Hmm. Well, you know, even though you don't have the background of, like, how did we get here, I think the amount of story set up in this issue is enough to help you understand what's happening in this book itself.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, you might not know how the elephant men were created, or, like, why, or, you know, why society the way that it is, but at least you understand the struggle between Yvette and the elephant men, and that's really all that matters here.
Yep.
All right.
Is only issue one came out, right?
Yeah, this is going to be a monthly series. There's 5 issues of this as well.
So we didn't get all of them like we did Super Freaks.
Correct, correct. So Super Freaks, I mean, you can, if you don't want to buy the single issues or, you know, read them for free, you can order the trade for that now because it's completed.
Yeah.
With Elephant Man, you're not going to be able to do that until all 5 issues are out.
Right.
Which, I mean, that's fine too.
I mean, it's not like it's the first time that that's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the way that this is going to work is you'll be able to order the trade, print on demand if you want to do it that way, the day that the last issue is released.
Yep,
that's also awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, well, you know, like, I think publishers have gotten better. You remember a few years ago, like, you'd have to wait like a year to get a DC trade.
Or like six months, right?
Yeah, 6 months. With Marvel, it was like 2 or 3 years sometimes.
Yeah.
And now it's like maybe 3 months tops and you got a trade. With indies, it's even less than that.
Yeah, like with Aftershock, it's a month after the final issue.
Yep, yep. So this is like day of the last issue, bam, get the trade.
Yep.
And I think that's good also. I think it it definitely lowers the barrier of entry a little bit.
Agreed.
All right, I'm going to let you pick the next book. I have an idea of which one you're going to choose.
Are we going to rate this one up?
Oh, yeah, let's rate this one up. I'll go ahead and give this one... I'm going to go ahead and give it a 3.5 out of 5 also. I think it's a solid book. I think there's plenty for new and old readers, but I want more of the Yvette story.
Okay. I'm going to give it a solid 4, actually, because out of the two that we've already talked about, this one intrigues me more as waiting for issue 2 of this series to come out, mm-hmm. and then plus going back and reading the older stuff.
Nice. All right, I'll let you pick the next one.
My name is Mercy, then. Ask for Mercy, yeah.
By the way, that is like that joke at the beginning was awesome.
It was, yeah.
All right, so let me just give a creative roll call on this one. This is also Richard Starkins, who's doing the Elephant Men book. And the art is Abigail Jill Harding, which they were both on the live stream. And Abigail Jill Harding looks like the Bride of Frankenstein. Same hair and everything. It was freaking awesome. She was wearing like... I know you're not a fan of insects, but that like Victorian type era dress.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that's what she was wearing.
Oh, with like that's awesome.
Bride of Frankenstein hair. It was amazing. they're both British also, so made sense. I don't think this is made explicitly clear in this book, aside from the Nazi reference, but it's set in World War II. Mm-hmm. And we follow Mercy, that's why it's called Ask for Mercy, as she gets recruited into a group of magical monster hunters who fight magical monsters created through Nazi magic.
Yeah.
This is a 6-issue miniseries, also going to be coming out monthly. Same deal as Elephant Men. Once the whole thing is out, you can order a trade if you so wish. All right. This one was very different. In many respects, it was really awesome. In mm-hmm. some respects, I was like, what did I just read? But not necessarily in a bad way. And I think in particular, like once Mercy goes to this... like
through the gate?
Through the gate to this hell dimension, mm-hmm. I think what is happening becomes a little less clear because things become so fantastical, right?
Right.
Like if you look at the first few pages... where there's a lot of humor. Mercy is a real estate agent, and she's like trying to make ends meet. So she's calling her clients, and like she's like, "Hey, make sure you know if you call the office, ask for Mercy," which is totally like what a real estate agent would do, right? Like if you ever see the billboards, like it's that kind of stupid crap.
Yeah.
So it made sense. The art is beautiful, I think, in those first few pages.
Yeah.
It in many respects it reminds me of like the Book of Magic, the Sandman spinoff book.
Okay. Yeah.
Reminds me a little bit of that. Or what was the other one? Fairies, I think it was called. Something like that. Book of Fairyland? I don't know. Maybe I'm making that up. But it was something fairies. it's that kind of art style. And the world, I think, in some ways is a little bit like the Sandman world, right? Maybe a little more steampunk.
Yeah.
Than Sandman, but
yeah.
It did give me that vibe quite a bit.
And with the title character's name being Mercy, and she's a real estate agent, so she's like ending each call with Ask for Mercy,
mm-hmm.
then you know it's coming up later where
oh yeah.
she's gonna beg or somebody's going to have to beg her to ask for mercy, mm-hmm. not her name.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was pretty brilliant also.
Yeah, it was pretty brilliant. And that's kind of how we get introduced to this fantasy world too, because as she's making these phone calls and talking to these people, she's got inner monologue going on as well. And across the street from, I'm assuming it was a coffee shop.
Yeah, it was coffee because it's Java Nero,
that's
which
right.
was black coffee.
Yep, that's right. Across the street from the coffee shop, there's what looked to be a church, maybe a cathedral of some sort. Mm-hmm. And there is a red door on it. And she keeps referring to, like, well, that's weird. I don't remember seeing that gate there yesterday. And it pops up a couple of times until we get introduced to this mystery guy who is obviously not human, right?
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
He's got, like, elf ears. He's got mm-hmm. super long, thin fingers with long fingernails. Mm-hmm. His skin tone is a little grayish. And I guess she doesn't quite realize that. Somehow she assumes that he's there on behalf of a client to
right.
look at some real estate.
Right.
And he leads her to the gate. They go through it. She's like, oh, my God, like, the gate is an actual thing? He's like, yeah. Like, very few people can see the gate. You can see the gate. And that's kind of why you're here. Except when she shows up to this place, they kind of just leave her alone. As she gets attacked by these, what would you call these things?
I don't. They're like a mix between crawdads and dogs or wolves or whatever.
Yeah, but it was
right? 'Cause
go ahead.
I mean, like, I don't know if it's like their version of like hellhounds or something like that.
It must be, right? They gave him a name. It was like something Geist.
Yeah. And they said that they always attack when somebody new comes through the gate.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But the weird thing was when she goes through, they're like, they're German fighter, planes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as they start flying into her, they turn into these wolf dragon things.
Yeah.
And start attacking her, and there's a group of people there, like the people that will become part of her team, they're just kind of watching her, and they're like, oh yeah, like you know, when I got here, I got attacked too. Like, should we go help her? They're like, nah, let's just see what happens.
And they all talk in third person.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, they sure do, especially the one guy. I guess he's the leader of the group.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name. He's the one that eventually goes in and attacks these monster things.
Yeah.
He was freaking hilarious. I don't even know why, but it just something about him made me laugh when I was reading it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, these people already know about this magical place. I'm assuming maybe they even had knowledge of it before they got there, is what I got. Whereas she has no idea that she has magical abilities of some sort.
Yeah. Well, they've been there for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know that these creatures attack a new person when it comes through the gate.
Mm-hmm.
And they also know that she's coming. Or, like, I don't know if it's a prophecy or what, but, like, because they said, are you sure that she's the one that we've been waiting for?
Yeah, I got that it was a prophecy type thing.
Yeah.
Where, like, she was born with abilities, but she lived a normal life her entire life. Maybe on purpose. And I want to know about that, right? Because
yeah.
maybe she was taken out of this realm by somebody or something and
yeah,
just raised to be normal.
Kind of like Backways.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Aftershock. Because not only that, but Mercy, like, this whole time, you see this strange, like, demon-looking guy, or weird-looking guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's unfazed by it. And
yeah.
he tells her to, let's go take a trip, or whatever. And she doesn't say why, or how come, or where are we going. She just says something about her car, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, once they go through the gate and the monsters are attacking her, like, that's not phasing her because she grabs her fence, right? Or saber.
What's it called? The saber. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And just starts doing it like it's second nature to her.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the main person says something about something, and she was, and then she questions it, and so then they say, well, all this other stuff's happening, but you question that, or right, that gets you interested, right?
Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's almost like it's second nature, like she's been there before, or something.
Yeah, I dug that. There's a lot of depth to the characters. I love the setup at the beginning, too, because I think it makes it feel more real, right? Like, you're going to enter this fantasy world, and mm-hmm. crazy stuff's going to happen, but... You know, ultimately, she's just like a normal person, so you're supposed to, like, feel for her, I guess.
Yeah, right.
Because they go through the whole story of why she fences. Because as a real estate agent, she has to put up a front, so she has a car that she can't afford. So people are like, oh, like, I need to buy a house from this person because, mm-hmm. you know, she knows what she's doing. Mm-hmm. She goes fencing because, like, only rich people fence. And she's broke, but, like, she can meet new clients that way.
Right.
You know, I thought that was really interesting also. I like that.
Yep.
Because it gave her a lot of personality. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The ending of this had me very intrigued. I had some issues with the fantasy sequence when she's fighting these things. Because the creatures are so fantastical that I think in some ways the art got a little lost.
Yeah.
In those pages. But...
Yeah.
Aside from that, I thought it was a gorgeous book.
Yeah, I thought the same thing, especially like how is a fencing saber gonna take down just that beast?
Yeah.
So.
Yep. And the creatures that are there, the other people in her team, they can shapeshift also. Because like that one guy turns into some black demon thing.
When
he gets to attack him. So that was cool to see. I wonder if she can shapeshift as well.
We'll see.
I'm assuming she can. I mean, based on the synopsis for the book, they're all monsters. So
Yeah.
But I think it'll be cool once they start delving into this like Nazi black magic. I've seen quite a few stories in, not so much in comics, but like in fantasy books, like alt history books. It's been done in like a couple of movies as well. Where they delve into like the occult side of the Nazis, because that was a big thing for Nazis too, right? Like they researched occult magic, kind of to add to their mythology of like, you know, the Aryan race and all this stuff,
right?
So I think that'll be interesting once they get into that.
Yep.
All right, I'll go ahead and rate this one first. Then I'm gonna give this one a 4 out of 5. I really really dug it. I love magic stuff, and I think this was done really, really well.
I'm right there with you. I'm getting a 4 out of 5, too, because there's a lot of interesting stuff going on.
Absolutely. All right. I think you and I are in agreement that we're saving the best one for last.
Yes.
And this is Savage Game. This, unlike the other ones, is not a miniseries. It's a 60-page original graphic novel. And it read extremely quickly.
Yeah, it did.
I was very surprised that it was 60 pages. It was created by Ryan Khalil, who's the center for the Carolina Panthers. He did not write the book, though. Sean Kittleson wrote the book. And the art is by Crispy Murray, who does art for video games. So this is his first comic.
Wow.
And you know who the letter is.
Who's the letter?
Simon Bolin. The man that does every comic in existence.
Yep.
This is billed as a high-tech version of The Island of Dr. Moreau, and I think that fits the bill pretty well. Ultimately, it's like a father-son story, and we get... There is a lot of character development in this book.
There is.
Like, an extreme amount of character development.
Yeah.
which was great because we don't have a lot of characters to begin with, right? Like, there's really three characters.
Yeah. Four if you count Air Eagle or whatever.
Air Claw. Yeah. Which I wasn't expecting that little twist.
No.
I don't want to spoil it either, but it was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, this scientist took all his money and his wife's money right before she died, and he has a biotech company. And in this world, I think he was the first one to do it, but other biotech companies have created islands in the middle of the ocean with no government so that they can pretty much just do whatever they want.
Yep, so they can get away from the FCC, right?
Yeah.
And the FDA.
Yeah, any regulatory agency.
Yep.
Because by having a government, their science is hindered. And since there's nobody to watch over them, they can pretty much do whatever they want. I don't think necessarily because they want to do bad things, but in order to advance the science that they want to advance to the highest degree, they can't worry about ethics. And I think that's one thing that's mentioned a little too briefly in this book. I think it would have been interesting to see more of that. Because
mm-hmm.
Like when the main character shows up to this island, the guy that's guiding him through, you know, all the stuff that they do, tells them like they have a cure for cancer that's already in testing. They like hybridize tomatoes to contain cow blood.
Yeah.
Because that's how they can cure iron deficiencies in Africa. Mm-hmm. And of course, like all this stuff is not possible in science because there's a lot of rules and regulations about crossbreeding species.
Right.
That, you know, if they were in the U.S. or the majority of countries, they wouldn't be able to do any of this stuff. And so none of these cures for things that are very serious and detrimental to a lot of people would be possible. So I thought that was really interesting. And they talked a little bit about that on the live stream when they interviewed the guys. And they mentioned, oh, God, what was that island? Oh, God, I can't remember. But that part of the inspiration was, what was it called? Seastead? God, I wish I remembered.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
It was like a big thing in the 70s and 80s. It was pretty much like an abandoned oil platform. This guy bought it. And like him and his family just live there. And over the years, it's been like this whole thing where like different corporations wanted to take over this platform. Like, there's nothing there. It's a all platform in the middle of the ocean. But there was like this whole big legal battle for this place. Pretty interesting story. And then, of course, like, you know, the science stuff, you know, like in some ways, I was surprised to see what they were trying to accomplish with the science, because, you know, to call back to like Ask for Mercy when we're talking about Nazis, some of the stuff that they are able to do is stuff that like the Nazis were doing, right? Like,
we
obviously the stuff that the Nazis did was bad. Right. But the amount of knowledge that we gained about like human behavior and human biology and psychology and things like that from horrible Nazi experiments in World War II has really advanced our culture quite a bit. And I don't think a lot of people realize the level of experimentation that those guys were doing and how that has impacted us. Like, you know, like the creation of the space program and like astronaut suits and all that, that was from like oxygen deprivation experiments that the Nazis were doing on Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And like, we wouldn't have a space program if it wasn't for that. And I thought it was interesting that they also didn't deal with that. And I know it would probably severely cut down the audience of this book if they went into the ethics. And so I understand why it wasn't done.
Yeah.
But for me, being a science and tech nerd, like, I would have loved to see that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, everything like you said, it was a huge page book, but there's like tons of stuff crammed in there. Mm-hmm. And I say crammed and not in like a negative way, because a lot of stuff gets flushed out, but there's definitely rabbit holes of stuff that I would love to get more flushed out.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I mean, the book ends, but it ends with a question mark.
Yeah, right.
So it's very possible that if this book does well, and I don't know how they're going to judge that with the business model, but if this does well, then I'm sure we'll get more stories on Savage Game. Anyways, all that introduction goes to say that basically what the scientist decides to do is create hybrid creatures. And not just him and his company, but all the biotech companies that have these islands with no government on them create these hybrid creatures. And the purpose seems to be to have the Savage Game. So there's like the main character is Airclaw, who's a wolf-eagle hybrid that looks super badass. There's an elephant tiger combo that it's kind of weird looking.
Yeah, with a electric eel tongue.
That's a different one. Okay. Yeah, that's the, what was that? I think it was like a tiger with, tiger mixed with an electric eel. So his tongue is like an electrocute people. Mm-hmm. What's the other one? The shark, the scorpion with the shark body,
mm-hmm.
was the weirdest thing to look at.
Yeah.
But it was awesome because like the color scheme made sense. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then there's a couple that they showed that we didn't actually see. Like the ones that would show up on that final battle. It looked like a horse with like crab legs maybe or something. I don't even know, dude.
I don't know.
I don't know. It was weird.
It's a Gryffindor.
But very imaginative, though.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, we learned that they want to do this because the guy's company is going bankrupt, pretty much. And they developed these creatures to have these games and televise them. And the charts are, like, through the roof, right? Like, they upload a video on YouTube, and it gets, like, 54 million views in like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But of course the scientist's son, who's there to like audit the island, isn't too happy about any of this stuff and wants to leave, and he can't leave for whatever reason. And we learned that maybe the good guys are the bad guys and the bad guys are kind of the good guys.
Yep.
And that was really interesting because I mean, I expected some kind of twist, but I think those twists lead into exactly why it is that this scientist created all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I think by that point, you're like, well, shit, like, this is not a bad guy.
Right.
And I really dug that.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty awesome and / creepy at the same time that the dad could be a hologram everywhere.
Yeah. 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 But with good reason, right?
Yeah, 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 with good reason.
And when you learn the reason, you're like, well, shit, like, all right.
Yeah, yeah.
This is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then the twist with the one creature, Airfang, or yeah. Airclaw, whatever.
Yeah.
That was really really interesting as well.
Yep.
And unexpected, because the creature attacks them in the beginning, except we learned that he wasn't really trying to attack them.
Right.
So that was an interesting twist as well.
Yeah.
It ends a little post-apocalyptic, I guess you could say.
Yeah, kind of.
But I liked it. I know you're not a big video game guy, but it reminded me a little bit. There's a video game called Dead Island, and it's a zombie video game, so, you know.
Yeah.
Say what you know about zombies. But it happens on an island, and like there's twists and turns as you go through the game, and in some ways it reminded me of that, so... I thought it was really well done. I was very impressed.
Yeah, I really hope that we get another volume of this.
I agree. Now, would you like to see a next volume as a mini or another graphic novel?
Well, was this out before?
That's a good question.
Or is this original for now.
No, I think this is original to this.
Okay, okay. Because I know that you can already get the paperback, right? Straight from Amazon right now?
Yes, you can do the paperback right now on
Amazon.
But
I guess that's if it's on print on demand, though, so.
Yep.
Honestly, I really don't care if I get another giant issue or if I get a mini, as long as I get more.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that. I think I'm with you. I know that there's some books that are moving to graphic novel format, like Astro City.
Yeah.
So, you know, this might just be the way forward, and maybe that's why Comixology is testing all these different types of releasing the books.
Yeah.
Which I found fascinating, because, I mean, like, that's the best way to do it. And with having no print overhead, they don't really have anything to lose either.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Why don't you give me a rating on Savage Game?
I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5.
Yeah, buddy, I'm with you.
Because it... Now, out of the four that we got straight out of the gate, this one I was the most engaged about. And honestly, I didn't think this one would be the one that I would like as much.
Totally with you. When I heard the pitch, I was like, this is going to be dumb.
Yeah, it's going to be like The Running Man, just not as awesome.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm going to watch that now. Damn it. Running Man's great. Yeah, I was with you, dude. When they were pitching it, I was like, okay, like, I'm going to read it because there's like kaiju things in there, but man, whatever. But I was extremely pleasantly surprised. The rest, I think, fell kind of where I felt that they would fall. I knew I would really like Ask for Mercy. I knew I would like Elephant Man, and I knew that I would be interested kind of in Super Freaks. So I think in that way it was successful. So overall, what would you think of the launch lineup?
I think it did what they wanted it to do.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah.
Like you said, it tested out the different formats. And it's gotten me ready for San Diego so we get more announcements.
Yeah.
For other books to come.
Yeah, so San Diego Comic Con is going to be the next batch of announcements. That's July 19th through the 22nd, so not even that far off, dude.
Nope.
Got like 5 or 6 weeks. And, yeah, the creators that they had on at the end, I'm very interested in.
Yeah.
Very, very interested.
You got Tim Seeley and Mike Norton and...
Yep, Tyler Crook, Magdalene Masaggio, yep.
Yep.
Yeah, so, should be good.
Yeah. They're not messing around.
And here's the thing. How can you ever cut your pull list now when you're going to get, like, how many books is it going to be? Like, 15 free books that you can read?
Yeah.
Insanity.
I mean, you don't even have to pay it because, I mean, if you're Comixology Unlimited, then you're just paying that monthly fee anyway.
Absolutely.
And it's free, so you borrow it, you read it, you return it. You get the other one.
I haven't talked much at all about Comixology Unlimited on this program, but it's freaking fantastic. It is so worth the money.
Yep.
It's literally peanuts, dude. It's $5.99 a month for 15,000 comics.
Yeah. And if you can't find something to read for $5.99 for the month, then something's wrong with you.
I agree.
Now, question though, since we're talking about this Comixology books and originals, do you think this is to combat with like what Netflix is doing with Millar?
You know, I hadn't thought about that until I recorded the episode Friday, and I totally think so. I totally think so.
I think it's Comixology 1 and Netflix 0 right now.
I agree. Well, I mean, Magic Order's not out yet, right? So we can't quite judge it yet.
Right.
But all they've announced is like a couple books, one that's, you know, out next week, I think, or the week after.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here we already have 4 and like 10 more coming next month.
Yeah. Well, I just meant like Netflix made the announcement to change the game.
Oh, right? Absolutely.
But then Amazon and Comixology up the ante and change the game even more with this announcement.
Well, I mean, really all Netflix did was say, hey, we're going to bring this guy in to make TV and movies for us. It just so happens he's also making comics as a testbed. Whereas here, like, you know, these might be a testbed for TVs or not. But really, I think what it does is change the way that comics are published. And I think, you know, for us in particular that love comics so much, it's a lot more interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Netflix doesn't have a way to publish a comic.
Not yet.
Not yet. Yeah, man, I don't know. If it's still a little early, right? But I think if I wanted to bring a comic to pitch it to an indie publisher, I would probably want to pitch it to Comixology first.
Mm-hmm.
Just because right off the bat, there's literally zero barrier of entry. And
totally agree.
That's one thing that's always tough for indies, dude. Like, you know, there might be a creator that you like, but the majority, you may not even know who they are. And here you are, you have to plop down $3.99, $4.99, or whatever it is. And that can be tough. Here, you don't need to do anything. If you're a Prime subscriber, you're done.
Yep.
All right. Ronnie Barron, thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me.
You get no trivia because it's not Thursday. Ha!
Awesome. But I did get some comic therapy, though, so.
You sure did. It's very true. You can, of course, find Ronnie on a multitude of podcasts. The Timey Wimey Podcast Hour, the Absolute DC Podcast, the Ultimate Marvel Podcast, and on this podcast every so often. You want to get in touch with me? Oh, Aftershock Central. How could I forget? Because I'm with you on that. I forgot my own podcast. Great. Way to go, me. You can, of course, find Ronnie on Twitter at Rumbo316 and follow all his shenanigans. I'm at Geekvine. You can also email the show, comictoday@gmail.com. I will be back tomorrow with the top of the pile. Thanks for listening.